Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is the Investor Resources live radio program, which means you can call in and ask us questions about your portfolio, about a position that you own or are considering to put in your portfolio, as long as it's a tradable security. And if it's not tradable, resources are difficult to find on things that do not have public markets.
That don't trade. Yep, that's harder.
Anyway, you want to give us a call this morning? We are wide awake, alert, and enthusiastic, as my dad used to say every day, whether he was or not. It was to change his own perspective on the day, to tell himself, I'm enthusiastic. And so here we are. You want to give us a call? Number is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. Just pick up the phone, punch in those numbers, and you'll end up on the call board, and we'll know you're there. And then we will include you in the show some way. We'll take a break in our regular schedule, whatever that happens to be. But anyway, you have some recommendation from your friendly neighborhood financial advisor, and you're wondering, is this really in my best interest? Well, give us a call. Let us take a shot at it and see what we can do with that. One thing that is true about the markets is there is no such thing as normal.
Yeah.
And that's the way that most people are told to build their portfolio. Long-term averages normalize things.
For quote, yeah, the normal market. And the bottom line is, there's no such thing, and they change so much that average just disguises what actually happens in the market. But there's, you know, we get clients and prospects that ask that question all the time. You know, are you sure we shouldn't wait to do this until we get a more normal market? And it's a very popular outlook, but there's just no such thing. Everything that happens in the market is normal, and it really doesn't matter what's going on. That's what's normal right now.
Well, just think about life, your personal life.
Yeah, that's ever, okay. We don't have to do that.
Has it ever been messy or unpredictable?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, those people just like you are the ones who make up the market. And so if life is messy and unpredictable and we're the ones that are making up the market, then the market is often normally messy and unpredictable. And that is our answer when people say, well, what do you think is going to happen next week or next month or next year or with proposed legislation? We don't know.
and no one else does either. And people will tell you they do, or they'll tell you they know what's coming up. They don't. And it doesn't matter what it is you're talking about, you know, interest rates or inflation or the where the markets are heading. No one knows where any of that's going to go, and they're all interrelated, and it's too complex a system to have any ability to predict what's going on out there or even why it's going on. But all the time people are saying, well, I'm going to wait till things smooth out and we're in a more normal market, and then I'm going to do this or sell that. And it's like you're waiting for something that doesn't exist. You can't do that. There's no such thing as waiting for normal. There's no such thing.
Well, I know I spoke with a gentleman recently who said, this market makes no sense. It's way too high. And I've been in cash for a very long time. And right. It makes no sense to put money in the market at this point. It will crash. And then I'll put money in it. He thinks that the Fed is manipulating the market. And that's not an uncommon assumption.
Sure, you bet.
But the market is way too big for any individual or entity to actually manipulate it. Now, it's true that the Fed does have an impact because they have artificially lowered interest rates by intervening in the market with massive amounts of money,
right,
which have
right.
kept interest rates low. Low interest rates, well, it doesn't matter whether they're low or high, interest rates are a factor in determining academically whether a stock price is viewed as undervalued or overvalued based on their earnings, price, sales, price, book, price, all sorts of stuff. You know,
right,
lots of
right.
different formulas to do that. So artificially low interest rates, artificial because the Fed is the main, not the, but one of the biggest buyers of treasuries where the benchmark interest rate is. Yep. And if they keep buying stuff, then there's no real reason for interest rates to rise if at these levels there's always a buyer. So the problem in the bond market is that we don't have real price discovery anymore. If you put a bond out at an unreasonably low rate, was Apple sold a bunch of bonds this week, or was Amazon?
Right.
Amazon sold a bunch of bonds this week. How about a 40-year bond at less than 1%?
That's a remarkable thing, but that's the nature of where we are right now. It's true.
Well, so basically, investors are assuming over the next 40 years, there will never, ever be inflation again. Why else would you take? I think the rate that the 40 sold for was 0.92. That is not an inflationary assumption.
No, and that's across the board. It's not just corporate bonds. You know, high quality corporate bonds, which an Amazon bond would be. Junk bonds in the past couple of weeks have started returning less than the current inflation rate. You know, you go out to a high yield bond, you're getting 4%. Inflation's running 5, and so it's like, wow, the market's kind of on its head right now, because that's unusual, but right now, that's normal. That's what's going on. Rates are so low that even if you're taking an inordinate amount of risk, you're still not beating inflation right now in the bond market.
So bonds are critical for all of those out there who are not our clients, who are using bonds as their risk management tool. It has been years since bonds made sense for managing risk in a stock market portfolio. So that, and that typically an investor ends up with a 60% stock allocation, 40% bond allocation, if you are approaching or in retirement. And the older you get, the more bonds are going to be forced into your portfolio just because you're older. The assumption is that bonds over the long haul, the very long haul, will generate somewhere between 5 and 7%. It just depends upon your database and your starting point on the calculation. But if we just saw a large amount of bonds sell for less than 1% for 40 years, how do you think your bond portfolio can average somewhere in that, let's call it 6 in the middle range? How are you going to average 6%? And how is that going to actually mitigate risk in your stock portfolio when, particularly over the last 14 years, when stocks go down, bonds go down too?
Mm-hmm.
That's not supposed to happen if you look at much longer periods of time. And that's why the academics have these models and why your friendly neighborhood broker is using that model, besides which that's what his company makes him do, even though in today's world, this makes no sense. You can't manage drawdown in your portfolio by owning something which also goes down at the same time. That's called high correlation. And that's where bonds are in today's market and have been for more than a decade. The normal long-term relationships are broken. You need a different process to manage drawdown. And that's why people hire us.
Those relationships change all the time. That's the problem with that pie chart. It's like the pie chart assumes that those correlations are constant. They don't change, and you can bank on them happening. And you just can't. The market changes so much so quickly. They're of no value if you're trying to put together a portfolio for what's going on in the market currently, which is, when you think about it, that's the only thing that matters. We don't invest 50 years ago. No one does. We can't. And so you have to get a feeling for what's going on right now, follow the data, and produce a portfolio, allocate a portfolio that is relevant for today's market, because that's the only one we can invest in.
So bond yields vary over time, and if you're looking at long-term averages, then they range somewhere between 2 and 4% almost half the time. If you go back to 1928, bring the numbers up to date, mm-hmm. a little less than half the time, interest rates on the 10-year treasury run somewhere between 2 and 4%. Now, that would be normal. But then you end up with other periods of time where interest rates are higher. I mean, they're above 10%, about 6% of the time. And that was the late 70s and early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
That period of time was a phenomenally good time for investors to own bonds because interest rates continued to fall from then to today. And as interest rates fall, bonds grow in value. They appreciate. That's where some of the offset occurs on risk management against drawdown against the stock portfolio. But we're no longer there. Interest rates may stay down for a very long time, but are they going to continue falling from the 10-year was 13 back in 1981, from 13 to 1.3, which is almost where they are now. And they're even below 1.3 on the 10-year this last week. That's a huge drop. And to assume that your bond portfolio is going to give you protection against a stock market collapse means that you believe interest rates will continue to fall from 1.3 to a number that I'm not sure how bad.
Yeah, that's the problem, because the bonds aren't there just for portfolio stability. They're supposed to be adding income also, and you're looking at that, you want that 4 or 5% return, and it's just not there. It is not there, and it's not going to be. And so you're guaranteeing that 60% stocks, 40% bond portfolio is not going to reach your goal. It is not going to produce the return that you're looking for, the return that you've been told you're going to get over the long term. And, you know, if you hold it for 50 years, it might. But in the meantime, you're going to be underperforming the entire time. And it's important to recognize that and understand that you need to do something different. We've heard from bond fund managers that are like, you know, maybe bonds aren't quite the place to be right now. It's like, yep, that's what we see too. So it's important to recognize the market you're in and adapt to what that is. We are up against our first break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone that next weekend, Saturday, August 7th, we're going to have our next market update. It's going to be at 9:15, right after the show here. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and click that registration link, and you're going to get an email back. There's a link in there, and next week you'll be live online with us, and you'll be able to see our screens. You can see all the charts we're looking at. Get some questions answered about what's going on out there in the market, what's going on out there in the economy, and we always have plenty of time for all of your questions. So go ahead and register. Again, that's at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, we'd love to talk to you. 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help@iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction. a real big spender. Good looking.
Well, I thought by now in our program we would be dealing with the proposed, almost certain to be uncertain infrastructure bill. The big spender is back at it.
Right.
But we didn't quite get there. So we were all talking about bonds. We got a couple other points I think we should wrap up before we talk about how the government is here to looking out for you, spending more money that they don't have.
Yeah, thanks. Right.
Yeah, that's kind of like the kids saying, hey, Dad, you know, I've got a bit of a problem here. Can you loan me some money? You know, it's just a loan. I'll pay you back. Someday.
There it is.
Yeah, that's someday when the United States taxpayer is going to pay back all that bond money that your friendly Congress has been borrowing with unknown limits. And anyway, back to the bond issue. One thing that most people don't know is that many pension plans have already abandoned the 60-40 rule as far as bonds are concerned. They're looking for some other way to generate income. Now, it's not just, pension plans and insurance companies. Both have typically been big buyers of bonds because pensions need payouts over a long period of time. We go back to the 80s when the 401k was initiated in 86 or 87. The assumption in a retirement plan, which paid out monthly income to the retirees, was that you're going to live about 12 years and then we're off the hook. Well, now it's 30 years and maybe longer.
Mm-hmm.
We need regular income to support those payouts. And insurance companies, they are in the pension business. That's what annuities and lifetime income streams are all about. And bonds have traditionally been a major source of generating that income. No longer. They are not in that marketplace anymore, not any more than they have to be. They are looking other places, and we're going to cover some of that later in the show. So bonds, as an indication of inflation, interest rates, if we have inflation, should be much higher. The bond market is telling us inflation, there ain't no way, folks.
Don't worry about it. We're going to be fine, right?
So in theory, if you're looking at current yield on interest rates, you say there's no reason here to believe that inflation is going to be a problem. And besides which, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, says it's transitory. Well, one of our professional friends happens to have a degree in economics from Georgetown, and I have to give him credit. I talked with him Friday, and he said, I listened to the entire conversation of Mr. Powell explaining what the Fed is doing, and oops, he slipped.
Yeah.
This is actually important to understand. While everything is transitory from the Fed's perspective, the question is, what is it they are looking at? And they're not looking at what you and I think are inflationary indicators. What do you think is an inflationary indicator? How about my box of Cheerios, which I don't eat anymore? It looks the same. Though there's something different about the picture on the front. It's not quite, but I still know it's Cheerios. But the content is smaller. Price didn't go down. No, price didn't go down. You look at a candy bar at the counter on the checkout stand, you know, that's the impulse stuff. They're smaller. Prices didn't go down. In fact, most prices went up. Wherever you look, you're seeing shrinkflation. Things are getting smaller, prices going up marginally, so it's not painful. But you don't get as much, so you want to eat, and you find out you have to buy more quantity in order to get the same balance that you had before. That's inflationary. It fits the pocketbook. That's a problem. Well, the Fed's not looking at that. That's what we think they're looking at. We think they're looking at car prices selling for full manufacturer's suggested retail price plus some, and nobody's complaining because you want a car, and that's what's available. So that's inflationary. Maybe that'll go away when production picks up once we get more semiconductors in the next year or two. House prices. And the Fed said houses don't count as inflationary because they're assets. But they cost more. It takes more money to... That's not an inflationary indicator. What are they looking at? They're looking at the rate of change. The rate of change in inflation is what the Fed is saying is transitory. So yes, inflation is going up, but inflation will not go back down. It's just going to go up more slowly when we get through the pandemic. That is different than what people are thinking the Fed is telling us. This inflation we're seeing is not going away. It's going to slow down in a year or two.
We hope. No one really knows. Inflation's just as hard to predict as anything that goes on in the market, stock market or the bond market. No one knows what's going to happen with inflation. The Fed is going to come out and say, hey, it's transitory. Don't worry. This is all going to pass. They don't have any idea if that's true or not. So they can't know that. And like we've said before on the show, Don, you know, they say, well, this is all going to pass. It's like, yeah, when? If it lasts for 3 years, does that mean it's transitory? Does that mean we have inflation for 3 years? So it's a perspective issue. And like you said, what are you watching? What is it that you're tracking? And if the price of that candy bar hasn't changed, but it's a third the size it used to be, that's inflation. It's just not something that the Fed's going to pick up on.
So we have a call from Mike in Everett. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Quick question. I was hoping you could field it. I'm one of your pie chart investors. Things may change here, but I didn't have a lot of choice. And I entered into the market on a 401k for the umpteenth time in January of 2019. And I am curious if you can tell me, I did select a aggressive portfolio. As aggressive as I could get it into. When you look at pie chart investors like myself, who probably didn't have a lot of choice at the time, since the market kind of adjusted immediately after COVID, what has the average investor in a pie chart aggressively funded account? I know they vary from custodian to custodian. What is the average return that an investor has gained in the last year and a half?
Have absolutely no idea. You're asking a question that is impossible to know without what is the actual allocation and what are the funds that are there. When you look at a 60-40 portfolio, that is this year is averaging about 8-9%. And it varies depending upon contribution rate and frequency when money's put in. So they're looking at a historic rate of return that is a static starting point and a static end point, does not give you a rate of return that you should expect when you're making periodic contributions, because each contribution alters the rate of return calculation.
Sure. And, of course, you get dollar cost averaging. I'm investing twice a month. regularly and have for the last 18 months, if that
good
helps.
Good for you.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. And I don't think that, and I haven't delved into it too extensively, but I would imagine that my portfolio is more like an 80-20 stocks versus bond, because I am postured into an aggressive fund.
Well, and you have less in the bond market, which has not added a lot. So it's mitigated that. So good for you.
Gotcha.
But, we don't collect data on different 401k models. I mean, we know what ours are. And if you want some guidance, you know, we do a monthly update for our 401k participants. And if you want a copy of that, send us an email, help@iriradio.com, and ask for the 401k update, participant update. And we need your first and last name. And I'll send you the update, and you can take a look and see what our models are doing, and you can compare it to what yours are doing. Because those models and those returns are calculated by, not by us, but by the plan custodian. And it's not the custodian. It's the third-party administrator that oversees the plan contributions and allocations. And so an independent party doing the rate of returns on our models. I'll share you. We give that to all the participants in the plans. So, I mean, I'll share it with you. It's not a problem. And you can look at that compared to what you're doing, and you'd make your own decision about your allocation on your 401k strategy.
But fantastic. I've been listening to you guys for about a month and a half now, and I really like your wisdom. I'm going to register for your next update, and I will put a couple things together for you gentlemen. And I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
You're welcome, Mike. I'd suggest you take the time to go to our website, iriradio.com. Click on the video tab and go watch the January video. If you haven't been in our monthly updates before, that January video will be instructive, as are each of those that follow, because none of them are repetitive. They're all new every month. In fact, the one that's coming up this next Saturday, we don't have a clue what's going to be in it.
We will
see what
goes on. But, and Mike, the most important thing is you're doing the most important thing. You are contributing regularly to your 401k. That's the best thing you can do. And then, you know, tracking your returns is good, but making sure that you're contributing, that's the main thing. Get the money set aside, and you'll thank yourself later for that. Believe me, you will. We are at the bottom of the hour here, Don. Time for us to get out of here, take a break. Would like to remind everyone, we do have our next market update coming up next Saturday, August 7th, 9:15, right after the show. If you would like to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. Easy to do, and just take a couple of clicks, and you'll be live with us next week, and get our update on what's going on. And it's a good time to get a second opinion on anything in your portfolio. We can show you the charts and let you know what we think about it, and then you get to make a decision from there. So it's well worth your time. You can register again at iriradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at iriradio.com and log on for a free report. That's iriradio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757.
Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour.
Yeah, we are facing a detour in the economy because this inflation problem is not going away. And the things that we want to have access to in terms of the things we want to buy for our family, for our business, those problems are going to be much more persistent than the Fed is letting on. One of the things that continues to frustrate businesses, besides the fact that they can't seem to find anybody who wants to work, or certainly can't find enough of them.
That's a big deal in and of itself, yeah.
And that is a problem, is that the things we want often come from other countries. We have shipped manufacturing overseas for decades. The premise was that if we could get other countries to participate in capitalization activities, that along with it, they would see that democratization was a benefit. And that hasn't turned out to be the case, because our biggest importer, our biggest exporter importing to us is China. And while they have become very prosperous due to our consumption, they have also become increasingly autocratic. If you've watched any of the news, you know that. And in once you get outside the United States and most of Europe, the vaccine distribution has been really poor and not available. And so a lot of the places where we buy things from, their ability to ship has been encumbered by having workers who are sick. They're still ill with COVID. And you look at ports and rail yards, the global supply lines are really struggling to get reopened. A lot of them are, if they're not shut down still, they're shut down intermittently, and intermittently not being able to load a cargo container means it's not going anywhere for a while.
It's not happening. The shipping's not happening. And that was, you know, the thought process initially was, well, let's diversify our supply chain, and that's going to strengthen it because it's not going to be dependent upon one or two countries. And what it actually has done is made the supply chain more fragile. There's more moving pieces and more things to break. And when they break down, it can take longer to get things back on track. And that's exactly what they're looking at right now. And that's another one of those things that can be inflationary when we can't get the goods we need. The ones that do make it here cost more because everyone wants them. They're willing to pay more for them. And so that it's a big issue.
Well, and you go to the store and you look at the shelves and you say, what's changed here? I mean, the products are different. Packaging's different. Well, like we get into the shrinkflation discussion we're having a little minute ago. But there's new coronavirus outbreaks, which are forcing factory shutdowns from Vietnam, Bangladesh. China's biggest port does not operate efficiently because their labor pool is often sick, and so nothing gets done, or it doesn't get done as rapidly as we would expect. And we're 18 months into this pandemic, or almost, and we have pandemic-caused manufacturing and transportation woes. I mean, two of the largest U.S. railroads last week restricted shipments from the West Coast to Chicago. You've got shipping containers that are clogging rail yards. They can't get them done. I mean, this results of what you just said, Perry. This results in limited supply. People want the stuff. How about school supplies?
But there you go.
The question is, are we going to have adequate school supplies? How about Christmas? This is a time when businesses, retailers would be stocking up, getting ready for the holiday season in the last quarter. We don't know how much of the stuff, a lot of which comes from China and Vietnam, how much of that stuff's actually going to get here in time. And if it doesn't get here in time, nobody's going to want to pay for it after Christmas. That leaves a real problem economically for the company of origin.
It does, and they're behind right now. And the problem is just an infrastructure issue. You know, how many of those big shipping containers can you move at one time? And so once you get behind, it's really tough to catch up. So even once, if everything returned to whatever normal is going to be, it's still going to take a while to move all that stuff because they're not easy to move. You know, that takes very specialized equipment, and there's only so much of it to go around. So it's one of those problems that's going to take a bit before it clears up.
So we have reported over the last several months about the problems at the ports of entry, L.A., Long Beach. We've seen it here in Seattle where the container ships, you know, I see it out in front of my house. They're anchored out here around Blake Island. That's Anchorage, waiting for these cargo containers to get into a port to be unloaded. And once they get unloaded, then the cranes drop them on top of a rail car, and they get shipped off, railed off to some other place in the country, Chicago. We just mentioned that. What do they do there? Now they have other cranes. They pick them up and they put them on a truck where a driver takes them out to a distribution point where they get unloaded, and then they use smaller trucks to get them to you and me. And when they can't offload the trains, that clogs up that side in Chicago, which means they tell Long Beach, quit shipping them. You know, we can't handle them.
We can't take any more. That's right.
And then the port says, we're full. Hey, Captain, drop anchor. We'll call you when we're ready. And so how long are they out there? Sometimes several weeks. Sometimes it's been 6 weeks. That just means the stuff's not hitting the stores. Your shelves are still empty. This problem backs itself up. I think we mentioned last week that Brazil, it's a major importer of coffee, or an exporter of coffee.
Sure. Yep.
And they haven't had enough rainfall to keep the rivers full. So getting barges downstream to the ports has been a problem. And many of those shippers looking in advance contracted for shipping. And the shipping companies recently said, yeah, that price is way too cheap. We've got better deals. We're just canceling your contract. So long, buddy. Find another shipper. We're just not coming. And we don't think of, because we don't get that much stuff from South Africa, they have the same problem. And they can't get shipping. They're a major exporter of oranges to Europe. They can't get shipping to get the crop out of there. Big problem.
That's bad.
Big problem.
Yeah.
And all of that adds to some inflationary impact. And some of that's the shrinkflation stuff. If I can't get as much stuff to put in my box of cereal, I'll put less in each box, and at least I can sell the number of boxes that I try to sell. So it's a compounding problem. And with that, as I mentioned in one of my conversations with a recent gentleman, he wasn't investing in the market because he expects that at these prices, this is unsustainable and the market's going to crash. Well, how many times have we been told the crash is right around the corner and you've got to be prepared for the world coming to an end? And predictions like that are often very distracting and not real.
And they can make them sound so scary. It's almost like they can get us going. We'll be reading about those, and it's like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. It looks like this does have to crash, doesn't it? Then you shake your head for a second and go, wait a minute, this is just somebody else making a prediction. It's just which is interchangeable with the word guess. They're just making a guess. That's all they've got. And they're always out there. And that the market's going to crash is one of the most popular predictions. That's how you can really get, you know, more readers on your newsletter, more eyes on the TV screen, is predict a big crash. That will always attract attention.
So crashes in commentary come from irrational beliefs, unmet expectations, and sometimes they actually do occur. They come from unknowable events, often referred to as black swans. But the fact is, you don't know. We don't know. The question that you have to deal with is, when the next crash does come, how are you going to deal with it? Do you have a plan other than buying a lot of bonds, which have not been effective? And that's your standard pie chart, modern portfolio, Studebaker era structure for managing risk. You need to do something differently. And that is why we do monthly market update webinars. And you can register for that at irradio.com, irradio.com, lower left corner, couple of clicks, your email and your first and last name, and you'll be registered for next week's webinar right after the show. And if you cannot join us live, you'll get a replay link as long as you have registered. We know you are interested. We will not forget that you wanted to be with us at the time. And if you're not getting our weekend review, I finished editing that yesterday. Send us an email, help@irradio.com. Weekend review in the subject line, first and last name in the body of the email, so we can put you into our constant contact distribution system. So when we're looking at these crash expectations, the forecasters often have rationalization. If only I'd known, then I would have been right.
It might have worked. What we do know for sure, Don, is that we're up against our last break of the morning here, so we're going to have to get back into our crash talk on the way back, which is great. If you would like to ask us a question this morning, you still have plenty of time to get your calls on the board. Give us a call, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. We'll be back in just one moment with some more talk about market crash predictions. Stay with us.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help at irradio.com. That's help at irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all.
That's what we want. We want to see clearly the forecast for the future so we know how to invest it without a mistake. But when we hear those forecasts or read them, or much worse, pay dearly for a bargain of a newsletter that is going to make it all clear, what happens is that the forecast is made and doesn't work out, so we get the rationalization that we're referring to when we went to break. It didn't happen, but I was close.
That's a good one, huh? I almost had it right.
I'm not wrong. I'm just early. Mm. It's still going to happen someday. Well, it's just one prediction. Well, the problem here is what in the business is called hindsight bias. It's not in the business. That's what academics say we do with the way our brains work, is we look backward for information that we want to believe will be true in the future. A forecast is a priori. It's a forward look. But in reality, all we see is a posterior. Is back over our shoulder, and that is not going to tell us what is going on in the future. And in the earlier segment, we talked about the fact that bond investors, traditional bond investors who have supported the market because of its income ability, it's supporting regular distributions upon which they can live, or with pensions and insurance companies make payouts to those who want the regular income. That has changed. They are abandoning the bond market as a source of income. But that hasn't shown up yet in the modern portfolio theory, 60-40, 70-30 portfolio structure.
They're still looking over their shoulder. They're still looking at past returns and making the assumption that, well, we're going to get something similar to that going forward. And right now, in our current structural interest rate environment, that's not going to happen. We are not going to get the bond returns of the past 30, 40 years. Everything has changed right now, and that needs to be recognized, but it's not, because they're, like you just said, Don, they're driving straight ahead, but they're looking in the rearview mirror, and they're not getting an accurate view of what's coming up.
So you want to find out how we do differently manage risk, and you want to take a look at your portfolio and have us give you a second opinion on how that works. You can send us your portfolio. We don't need the value of it. All we need to know is what you own. And we'd be glad to do that as a freebie. You don't even have to come in. We can do it online and walk you through how we look at markets and what we do differently to control drawdown risk. That's what you want to avoid, is a significant drawdown in your account. We have done that in our portfolios. We did that last year when the market dropped 34%. We did it back in 18 when the market dropped 20% in the last 3 months of the year, and to get back in. And if you should know more about that, because that process works. What's happening in the bond market with these major buyers leaving is that they're going to real estate. And you think home prices are high? Yeah. You're not alone. The Fannie Mae Home Purchase Sentiment Index shows that it has fallen to a record negative 32%, far below positive about buying a home back in 2011 and 12. this is a real change. Home prices are up more than 20% over the last year. So it seems discouraging if you've never bought one before. If you have one to trade out of, that gives you a leg up on the deal. So part of the blame has been on institutions buying houses, and they have been. We've reported on this in prior shows earlier in the year. And one of the things that's happened this year is that just recently firms are developing housing tracks. And we know that we see that happen. D.R. Horton's one of those companies, and there are others. D.R. Horton built out 124 home development. Normally, you'd see a local broker with a model home trying to sell those.
And they're happy about that. Yeah, I got 124 new homes to sell. You know, that's good news for the realtors.
D.R. Horton held an auction for the entire neighborhood. That's not something mom and pop show up to buy.
No, that takes a bidder with deep pockets to go in there and say, well, I don't want just one home. I want the whole neighborhood. Let's go for the whole enchilada here. And they sold them.
Fundrise LLC, which is a corporation that owns and manages properties on behalf of thousands of investors, they bought the whole deal, the whole enchilada, and they are going to rent them out. And they're not alone. The Teachers Retirement System of Texas and Pacific Life Insurance Company and an additional unnamed large investor, they're leveraging $5 billion to purchase 18,000 single-family homes for rent because the rental income is higher than bond interest rates. Not only that, but since these really are long-term investors, they have 30, 50-year horizons, they expect inflation to be bigger than 0.92, like the Apple bond buyers. The income should go up, rents should rise over time, plus they get appreciated assets, which helps the stability of the company. This is a major change in the investment business, but it's not being reflected in the way the majority of investors are told to manage their stock portfolio. We have Ed from Linwood. Ed, we have a few minutes left here. You're on the air with Don and Perry and Investor Resources.
I have a question about money. At the risk of telling you this, when we had horses, we paid for our own oats and hay. When we developed an automobile, we paid for our own gasoline and then again on diesel. But now we think that we have to pay for people buying electric automobiles. And so we have to spend federal money to do that. I don't understand why. Second item, when Ford and Chevy only make four electric automobiles, where are we going to get all the lithium for all those batteries?
That's a good question,
Ed. Where are we going to get all the electricity all these vehicles are now using if we don't use gasoline or the equivalent fuel, gas, to manufacture the electricity?
Well, you are raising some legitimate questions which the politicians do not want to address, and your green-pushing policy politicians like AOC, they don't want to talk about that stuff. If you lived in California where they already use brownouts just to keep the electrical grid from collapsing, and that shuts down your freezer and refrigerator and air conditioner, you raise the issue of how on earth are you going to run your electric car when they shut off the electric system and you have even greater demand. And that transfers demand from coal and oil to other systems which do not exist. The one that would exist and solve that problem would be nuclear, but not in my backyard. Can't build that. I don't remember the city, but there's only one city that I have read about recently that is encouraging nuclear plant development because they're shutting down the coal plant and they know the nuclear plant is going to replace energy and jobs and keep the community from dying. So
may I offer you a thought? Between now and next time you're going to be on the radio 1 week from now that you have spent a little more time on it and offer a information to those people who are interested. Here's what's going on. Here's the things you want to avoid, and here's the things you want to buy.
Well, we have discussed the lithium issue, and frankly, there's not enough lithium mining, and there are no mines approved in the that it's going to get major rare materials to market in 16 years before those mines are going to be approved, developed, and production. That's a problem. And the marketplace will find out originally that these costs are going to be too high, and the government cannot continue to subsidize all of this. At some point, the taxpayer is going to revolt. So your concerns are real concerns. They're legitimate concerns, and the politicians don't want to deal with it. They're going to keep funding it until we taxpayers say enough's enough, not going to do that anymore. Thanks for calling, Ed. That does open up a phone line, but it won't be available until next week on our show. You want to talk to us in the meantime, give us a call at 800-317-9119. Register for next week's webinar, irradio.com, irradio.com. Get the Week in Review. Send us an email, help@irradio.com. Week in Review in the subject line, first and last name in the content of the body of the letter. Call us during the week, 800-317-9119. And Lord willing, we are going to be back live next week. And maybe we'll talk about lithium. It's a legitimate concern that Ed raises. And the massive amount of money that the president wants to spend on electric car charging stations. God bless you, and God bless the USA.